Hello, all, and welcome to this evening's episode of Let's Do It Radio with Sergeant Parks out of Yakima, Washington. Today is Thursday, March 24th, 2022, and I am Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer, broadcasting to you, our worldwide listeners. We are about to embark on a journey of how we can save the world, part one. We'll have part two in a couple of weeks. Before we do, join in the conversation. Call in to 845-241-9985. But before we do, we want to welcome this evening's presenter, Sergeant Park, and his guest with a round of applause. Everybody, that was like my rounds of applause.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was definitely show stopping.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Well,
Sergeant Park, everybody,
oh, go ahead. Just you always jumping in on me. Go ahead and meet and greet the listeners, and then introduce our guest, Mr. David Wayanis of Yakima. And it's in your hands, Sergeant Park. Yay!
Well, thank you, Inez, for that lovely introduction.
You're welcome.
And today we really have an exciting show, and our guest speaker is Mr. David Wayanis. He's out of Yakima. And David is real, well, he has so many skills. I think I met David back in early 93, 94, somewhere around there. And then we started an after-school program in one of the church's buildings.
Okay.
And David is a scholar.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a parent, has a daughter, and he's a community activist.
Okay.
And he's the kind of person that loves to bring people together, you know, and let's talk about what's going on. And he addressed a whole lot of issues in the community, in fact, around the world. Today, David is gonna bring us a presentation on forming how to address different issues in in nonviolent ways. He's also had three principal people that he's gonna talk about. One of those is Leon Sullivan. There's a documentary on him. We're gonna see a clip about him, and he's gonna talk about Dr. Sullivan's and the Sullivan principles. The other one is, I didn't even know this guy until David. We had a conversation, and David brought him up. His name is Gene Sharp, and he is the founder of the Einstein Institute. Is that right, David?
Yes, Albert Einstein Institute.
Yeah, Albert Einstein Institute. And I started writing about him, and he wrote several books on how to overthrow dictatorship. Well, that is really good because, you know, we're running into what's going on in the world, and mostly we read about all of these dictators. So that'll be a definitely good presentation for David. And the last one is the Minsky Act. If you notice what's going on now with the president and then the NATO nations, that they are really, and get me right if I'm wrong, they are really citing to sanction Putin and all of the oligarchs, because of that Minsky Act allow the United States, to do that for anybody that has perpetrated and maybe did something to people and stuff and violated their civil rights. And David will explain. He'll explain more when he does his presentation. So now I'm not going to take up any more of his time. You got the floor, David.
Before you have the floor, let me tell the people to call in at 845-241-9985 if you want to join in the conversation and be live and talk with Mr. David Wayness. Again, the number is 845-241-9985. Now you have the floor, sir.
Excellent. We have the opportunity now to do something to save our planet. People don't realize how close we are to nuclear war or biological war. We're hearing from China and we're hearing from Russia. They are serious about shooting these very terrible bombs at us. But if we listen to Leon H. Sullivan, had the Sullivan principles to bring to oppose the apartheid in South Africa. And if you look into your history, it did work. And he was on the board of General Motors, and he was in a position to bring some things to people's attention. And then look at what Gene Sharp did. He founded the Albert Einstein Institute to engage every person in nonviolent direct action. And one thing people don't realize is if you are not personally involved in nonviolent direct action to promote peaceful cooperation, you might be missing a trick. You might actually be kind of supporting the wrong thing. The third thing Magnitsky was an accountant who worked inside Russia. And his employer became aware that the government of Russia had arrested him and abused him and killed him, and that he gave years of his life to get the United States government to pass the Magnitsky Act, because we have to have the ability not just to go to war, because that won't necessarily do any good, but to stop paying money for people who are doing criminal activity. Now you want to ask why do we have to do this? It's because today you see what's going on with Russia in the Ukraine and the threat of nuclear war. Now that means that we're at as dangerous a point as we were when the Russians sent their nuclear subs to Cuba to get up in the face of President Kennedy. Now, at that time, a nuclear war could have started. But one of the officers on the Russian sub, the order came down, shoot the nuclear weapons at the United States, and he said no. And this is nonviolent. You have the ability to say no. Now, the second thing is the whole world is watching. Now, the People's Republic of China is saying, we're supposed to do our job and do whatever we're supposed to do in China, and we have this idea we want to take over Taiwan. Now, some people think that there's an international rule, no more can any country just invade another country and take over their land. This is what China is saying. We want to take over the land of Taiwan. So they're watching with sharp eyes on what's going to happen in Ukraine. Now, if we just have a violent response, and that may just blow up into more of a conflagration. So can we, each one of us, vow that we're going to have a nonviolent response? The third thing, other nations are watching the ones that have nuclear power, such as France, India, Iran, Israel, North Korea, Pakistan, Russia, United Kingdom, and the United States. There's nine nations that could shoot off nuclear bombs, let alone all of the diseases and things that they could. So this is the time. Now, Gandhi said a single perfected satyagrahi could stop an atom bomb. And mm-hmm. and I submitted this paper, Gandhi, on the nuclear arms. So that was six pages, and we're not going to read that right now. But even in the hours before he died, he was being interviewed about can nonviolence stop nuclear war? And he said yes. So we should be aware. You should be aware. You have power. We must individually and in groups and government activate the three campaigns that are vital to our survival right now. Leon A. Sullivan principles to bring moral pressure to bear on governments, corporations, and individual people for righteousness. And two, to activate the Albert Einstein Institute plan and the training taught by Gene Sharp to engage every person in nonviolent direct action and training to promote peaceful cooperation and to stifle the warring behaviors. And the third is activate the Magnitsky Act to sanction criminal human rights violations. So these are things. Some people say, "Oh, we've got to do something about this thing going on in Ukraine." Well, the people
proposing,
"Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this," but they're saying, "Let's get some more missiles to shoot at the tanks. Let's get some more missiles. How about have some jets? Let's maybe we should shoot our nuclear bombs before Russia has a chance to shoot theirs." See, these are things that could add to the fire. But if we train ourselves and activate, see, already we have experience with the Sullivan principles to bring moral pressure to bear. We can look in our history and see, how did they do that in South Africa? And I understand we're going to have a video, an audio clip.
A clip?
The Sullivan principles. And we can look at the Albert Einstein plan. See, if you are not involved in training, chances are when you go out in a mass demonstration, you're going to get arrested, thrown in jail, and stay in there for 2 years waiting for the United States government to say, "Well, you tried to have an insurrection against the country." If you're going to have a direct action, you have to have a lot of training and preparation. You have to have observers in the field. You have to have lawyers. We have to have a preparation, and you have to figure out what is the other side going to do. In the case of what happened on January 6th, the people were opposed to, they said, "I'm going to try to trick all those people," and it turned out very bad. And the third thing on that Magnitsky Act, it was the Magnitsky Law of 2012, and then they made it bigger to the global law to sanction human rights violations in 2016. But it has a sunset provision. It's going to go out of effect in this year, 2022. So it's a good time to watch a YouTube with Bill Browder, who it was his friend and lawyer delegated to work on issues inside Russia. It was the Sergei Magnitsky, and you call up your representative in Congress and make sure that they activate that law again for this year. And remember, this is not about Bill Browder. It's about exercising our moral strength to stop this kind of violation. So. I challenge our listeners, if you are aware of action that you are doing right now to push forward the Sullivan, the Magnitsky Act, then you're on the right track. If you are not bringing it up in church, bringing it up at the city council, carrying the sign, if you're not actively mm-hmm. working, you might accidentally be part of the problem. So call a friend,
wow.
get on the mm-hmm. sign, hold a meeting, write to a newspaper, camp out at the office of a congressperson. So we can do this. We can survive. So think of your children. And mm-hmm. that's my statement.
Okay, so in you wrote a paper March 7, 2022, Now is the Time for All Good People to Come to the Aid of the Earth. What was that
That's
about?
Right.
You want to tell us?
I became very almost depressed when I saw the risk we were having to go into a nuclear war. What could
uh-huh.
be done? And I focused on my 15-year-old daughter. I'm sitting outside
okay.
the police station.
Mm.
She's inside the police station. She's in a group of explorers. It's called an explorer post to support the police in Yakima. And she wears a
okay.
uniform and a vest. And she's learning to be a citizen. So that's my
okay.
biggest job, to be a father. So here I am outside
okay.
and talking to you. And
mm-hmm.
so I want a future for her. I want morality in our world.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's so much trouble. It's hard to think what political party should I support because there's so many problems with every one of them. But if you are in your church group or in your civic group or in your
mm-hmm.
your ethnic group and you are
mm-hmm.
Still a problem and then you make a sign and you make up a leaflet, and you are getting people to think about supporting Sullivan, Sharp, Magnitsky, then you're making things go in the right direction. And that's what I want people to do. That's what I want to do.
And you talk about, you know, you don't know who to support and so on and so forth. The other day I was having a conversation on my own show, Miss Inez Says Let's Talk About It. I think I was talking to Sergeant Parks. I mean, as big as the NAACP is, I don't know why we don't just have our own group. You know, we got the Democrats, we got the conservatives, we have the liberals. Why can't the NAACP have its own group of voting, you know, and bring up people in the right ranks? It's just something that, you know, I became passionate about. Like you have your daughter, you know, that you're worried about and want to make sure that everything is good in the hood and, you know, she has a place to grow up to and that the world is good. So, you know, what do we do? Well, I mean, why
years
can't we do that? Why can't we
Well, think what they did years ago. You know, if you happen to have the wrong skin color and you was to get on a
mm-hmm.
Greyhound bus, they
mm-hmm.
kick you off
mm-hmm.
or break your face or do all kind of bad things to you. So people got together up in the north, and they said, we're going to ride all the way down to New Orleans, and
okay.
we're going to eat in the restaurants together. And they had people of every color, and they had
uh-huh.
people who committed to be nonviolent.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't work if you pack a pistol and say, now you got to let me eat in your restaurant. You let me ride in your bus.
Mm-hmm.
You keep
mm-hmm.
out
mm-hmm.
of it, and you say, look, the thing is very, very moral. It's very simple. People should
gotcha.
Be allowed to ride on a bus. Now, those buses got firebombed. Those buses got attacked. The people got
mm-hmm.
beat up.
Oh, no,
but after the people got beat up, some more people heard about it. And then the biggest prison in Mississippi was filled with people from all over the country. The
gotcha.
Simple idea was
gotcha.
We could drop on that bus and it don't make
mm-hmm.
any difference what now people
right,
think
right,
it's
right.
okay we can ride that bus no matter and don't
mm-hmm.
have to sit in the back or anything. But it didn't happen by itself. So people had to do this. And now if we want the future to be, we don't have nuclear war,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be the ones today. Maybe we'll, in Russia, they get arrested. They get killed.
Mm-hmm.
They get, and who knows, that might happen here. Right. Some people tried to have a demonstration in Washington, D.C., and some of them are still in jail. So we to have nonviolent action, it requires a lot of cooperation and training. And if you read some of Gene Sharp's books, you'll see how that book, the books that he wrote about how to get rid of dictatorship with nonviolence, it was translated into 31 languages. And
wow,
it went all
okay.
over the world, and it sparked the revolutions of nonviolence. But those revolutions are not over. So
okay.
those people still need to do that, but then we need to do that.
Gotcha. Nice. Sergeant Park.
Anis, can you hear me?
Okay,
I
hold
can
on.
Hear me.
Yes, we can.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know what's going on with this year. Okay, but
what?
Thank you, David. Let's go. Let's play that first clip.
It's called The Principled Man, Reverend Leon Sullivan's documentary excerpt.
God with you, God will make a way for you. And when they get in your way, don't even argue with them. It takes too much time. Shake it up and step over the mountain.
He is called the Lion of Zion. Reference to his many years in the pulpit of Philadelphia's Zion Baptist Church. A reference to one who reigns in God's kingdom.
This OIC Center has been the place where now thousands of Liberian young men and young women have been trained doing constructive work and jobs. You hear a lot about the problems in Liberia, but you don't hear what's being done constructively out of programs like this. And I'm overjoyed. I mean, from a swamp to this, and thousands of young men and women being helped of a nation shows what faith and hope in God and hard work and self-help can do.
It is a fitting metaphor for the Reverend Leon Sullivan, whose roar echoes from the mountains of West Virginia to the villages of Africa.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you a leader among leaders, a true international leader, the Reverend Dr. Leon Howard Sullivan.
A towering figure in America's civil rights movement, Sullivan has spent his life stalking his twin foes, injustice and oppression.
Today we express our inexpressible appreciation to Secretary General Kofi Annan for permitting the announcement of the Global Sullivan Principles of Corporate Social Responsibility to be made at this special gathering at the United Nations.
But Sullivan is a man who fights without bloodshed, whose territory is not bound by church walls or the barriers that divide races or nations. He says his ministry is to lift the downtrodden, to help those who have no clothes, who have no jobs, who have little hope. He has carried that calling into the boardrooms of international corporations, and his principles of equal opportunity helped free a nation.
I want you to work together and love each other and help each other. And it'll spread all over West Virginia and one day all over the world.
The story of Leon Sullivan is a remarkable tale of faith and perseverance about a man who took a stand against injustice and oppression at an early age and has been standing on principle ever since.
Was blind, but now I see.
A March 1st, 1971, at 8 o'clock in the morning, Leon Sullivan, a minister from Zion Baptist Church in Philadelphia, walked into the corporate headquarters of General Motors in New York City to take a seat on the board of directors, the first African-American in the history of the United States to serve on the board of any major international company.
All right. Sounds like Dr. Martin Luther King. It really does sound like Dr. Martin Luther King.
His daughter carried on.
Died too. Am I still got bad boy noise coming on my end?
No, you do not. No. But Mr. David was saying something. Go ahead, Mr. David.
Yes, he did die. And so his daughter carried on with his work, Hope Sullivan Masters. But she ran out of money. Now, why did she run out of money? You see, could it be that there was racial discrimination? People don't want to see black people get up a lot of strength to make positive social change. And now she came to have one of the annual meetings of the Sullivan, it's called the 2012 Sullivan Summit, and it was at the city of the dictator of Equatorial Guinea. So people all over the world says, oh, point the finger at Hope Sullivan Masters. She is bad because she had something to do and she took some money from this bad dictator. Well, maybe that's true, but that is not a good to abandon the Sullivan principles. So we need Dr. Sullivan's original vision applied to how humans can survive nuclear war threats now.
Nice.
But David, what were the actual principles, the Sullivan principles that he talked to the when he was in Africa, that he was trying to get those corporations and the government of South Africa to realize in their hiring practices and how they treated people.
When you're going to get a diamond and put that on your beloved's hand, it might come out of the ground in South Africa. Now, were those people that dug that diamond out of the ground, were they kept 100 or 500 miles away from their families? And did they go down in the mine? Did they have no protection from the quality of the air? So the Sullivan principles are, people, when they're put to work, they have to have provision for their families. They have to have industrial safety. Now, the General Motors was not the only car company active in South Africa. Ford was down there. Now, if Ford went to South Africa and said, well, this is just the way the apartheid, this is just the way we have to do business, Sullivan principles said, no, you don't. You have to treat people right and treat people equally and get rid of this apartheid at the corporate level. You can work at the corporate level, work at the individual level. You can go down to the Congress and you can testify, but you have to do all of that together. And people are motivated by money quite a bit. So his principles were that they had to have safety at the job. They had to have respect for the individuals. They had to have an end to this apartheid. You know, all of those things that we know now that we would call civil rights, these have to be active for people. And as we heard on that audio, Kofi Annan of the United Nations came on board with the principles to make them a global principle. And if we have something like in the U.S. News and World Report for the 10th of January of 2013, oh, how bad was Hope Sullivan Masters? Oh, she took some money from this dictator. What was the point of that article? To kill a program that was good. And if you want to make that program better, you can donate some money. But And that's the problem we have, is people want to, they see it, they feel threatened. We want to get a military solution to the, every problem has to have a military solution. The CEO of Raytheon made $2 million in 1 year. Then he got a war going in Afghanistan or somewhere. That next year, he got $13 million. And then the next year after that, he got $30 million. And then he was a billionaire by the time he was done. It was in his money interest to have a war. He would not want to have a nonviolent solution in Afghanistan or anywhere. And then the United States government was sending billions of dollars to Pakistan. They were using it to pay the terrorist groups. See, the war solution is, we need the nonviolent solution.
Okay, so David, it sounds like me that the Sullivan principles would fit the United States perfectly, as it has been for many years now, you know. And I'm reading some of his principles: non-segregation of races and all eating and comfort facilities, equal and fair employment practices for all employees, equal and fair employment, equal paid for all employees. That sounds like something that's going on today, the same type of deal that's going on today that a lot of people don't, apparently, you know, don't get it. You know, like you say, it's all about money.
The principles also said, if you look at people and they don't have skills, then you start the Opportunities Industrialization Council, and he set up 60 of those training centers where people could learn jobs. Right. Learn the job skills, because you don't want to have just negative. Don't have the war. That's good. Don't have the war, but you have to have positive. People need to be productive and earn a good living, and that's what the OIC was all about.
Okay, so you want to see if we got any callers on there that want to chime in on the topic?
We have, let's see, we still have Randy Gottlieb. I don't know if she wants to chime in. I know she wants to listen. Randy,
you want to come in?
Well, we could talk about the nonviolent training at the that Gene Sharp did.
Okay, David, we're trying to see how many callers want to ask some questions on the topic.
You bet.
Randy, are you still there?
She's here, but, I mean, she may be just on mute, so.
Probably just.
She's unmuted.
She's on mute?
I know she was just listening. I mean, she may have muted herself is what I'm saying, but because she's unmuted, so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, is anybody
so
else?
That, no, no one else. Mm-mm.
Okay, so David, let's go to this next clip on Gene Sharp, and then we'll come back on the other side, and then we'll talk on the other side.
Right.
Okay, this is a real short clip, about a little over a minute, minute and a half. Here we go. Insight with Gene Sharp. From dictatorship to democracy.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for coming. I'm Rory Arrow. It's been my great privilege for the past 2.5 years to be making a film about a man who I think will probably be seen as one of the most important political thinkers of our generation. I'd love to read you a piece from the Times today, which describes Gene's work. And it says, "Not perhaps since Machiavelli has a book had such impact in shifting the balance of power between the rulers and the ruled." Unlike Machiavelli, however, Gene Sharp is not advising princes how to hold on to power. He is telling millions living under dictatorship how to liberate themselves. How to Start a Revolution, the film, has been doing the film festival tour around the world, and I've been consistently berated for not asking many of the questions I should have asked. So I'm delighted to be able to redress some of the balance tonight. So first of all, we're going to show you the trailer of the film, and then we're going to have a conversation with Gene.
Oh, okay. So that's what we have there. And if anybody wants to call in at 845-241-9985, go ahead and join the conversation on Saving the World Part 1. Again, we have with us our guest speaker, Mr. David Wayness, Saving the World Part 1 with our host, Sergeant James Park. Go ahead.
Okay, David, tell us something about Gene Sharp. I know that, and then maybe we can get into Gandhi, you know, because a lot of your writings I was reading had something to do with Gandhi's vision on nonviolence. I think that was real up, but let's talk a bit about Gene Sharp, and because I didn't know Gene Sharp up until you mentioned it, you know, to me, so I went and did a little research on it. But let's talk a little bit about him.
Gene Sharp worked with people who were trying to stop racism, people who were trying to stop the beatings of people who were just trying to ride a bus along with the people of other different colors. And he taught about how to do training. So people in Philadelphia, people in all over the USA, they were concerned about the safety of a nuclear power plant, but they did not want to go out there and get accused of violence. So to have training for doing nonviolence, you had people spending as much as a week trying to learn how to do training. You might do role plays. You might do what are called social dramas. Try to understand the viewpoint of the police people, and to understand the viewpoint of the opponents, and try to understand the interests of the people who were upset about what was going on. So when you do those role plays and those trainings, you come out with a better way. Now, if you look at what happened on January 6th here, after Biden was elected, I don't think those people had any kind of training or preparation. So what Gene Sharp was trying to tell you, you need training. He got in a canoe and paddled up the river to go into Burma to talk to the people in Burma when they were having to fight against all of the army dictators trying to ruin any kind of public participation. And his works went into Libya. They went into Egypt and all of these places, so people would read the book in their own language and learn. So he would write books, and he would say, well, people say, well, you can't do something against Adolf Hitler. And he would write in his books articles about how people did come up against Adolf Hitler with a nonviolent method, or you cannot do it against Russia. And he talked about the Kalima gold mines up in the north of Russia and how the people organized nonviolent direct action against the inhuman practices that the Russians were using. They would get the gold out, and they didn't care if it hurt all the people. And these activities worked. When you did the training, you did the nonviolent direct action. So this is the contribution that Gene Sharp made. But now, if you look at Libya was pressured by nonviolent means. You can't be involved in making these nuclear bombs. So the dictator of Libya said, okay, give me a great big airplane and I'll fill it up with everything that could be used to make the uranium into a nuclear bomb. And he did that. he gave up his nuclear ambition. After that, people from the United States government killed Muammar Gaddafi. So you have a situation where Gene Sharp said people need to do the nonviolent direct action and have a nonviolent movement and not rely on the government. Because if you're relying on your government, they might use it in a wrong way. So Martin Luther King wanted to have a massive demonstration in Washington, D.C., and he needed an organizer, and he had Bayard Rustin. Now, Bayard Rustin had some personal details of his life that they were the leaders were a little embarrassed about, so they didn't want to make a big national figure out of Bayard Rustin, but he was very courageous. He was part of those freedom rides that went all the way down to the South and risked getting beat up and so forth, and he was a superb organizer. That's the thing that you have to have in nonviolent direct action. You have to be more organized than your violent opponents, and the March on Washington came off very well, and the people had they had the proper portable toilets, they had the drinking water, they had the food supplies, and they had tents to protect them from the heat. So these are the things that you need to think of when you're doing nonviolent direct action. So and these are the things that Gene Sharp, he would write these books and he would interview people and he would try to teach everyone that this is what you need to do to have people power, not the the elite oligarchy have the power.
Wow, that's real interesting. So David, what is your idea of and how can people get in contact with you for more talks or more discussion on the paper that you published and those three articles?
I don't know if it's a wise thing to give my email, but here it is. It's my name, David R.
Well, what you could do also, David, is, you know, it's your regular email address, because I think that we could put that tag along with this clip in our website. On our website, is that possible?
If people contact Blog Talk Radio and say they would like to be contacted, we can do that. Now, I am available to
go somewhere
and give nonviolent protection training. We can do training for trainers, which I have done many times. And something that the Fellowship of Reconciliation did back in the day was to have a nonviolent training and action center. And we would call it a NVTAC, NVTAC. So in Seattle, Washington, when I was a university student, we set up the Seattle NVTAC. And we set those up in Chicago and Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia, and we could set one up in your town. So if you contact the Blog Talk Radio and you invite us to come, then sometimes you have that in a church. You might have a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon training session, and then some of the training sessions involve going out on the street, because you've got to do street speaking, making up a leaflet, talking to the newspaper, writing letters to the congressman, writing letters to the newspaper, and there are so many things involved. In fact, there's a role for a lawyer, because if people get arrested, they want to have someone that they can call to help. Is there some way to get them out? And many times if there are large numbers of people got arrested, then the lawyers can help. Martin Luther King wrote letter from a Birmingham jail using tissue paper to write his letter.
Yes, he did.
And so we need to copy the efforts of our great leaders and get ourselves trained and then go out and exert nonviolent power, because if you're exerting nonviolent power, that is far better than trying to defeat violence with violence.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay, so David, I'm gonna figure out something where maybe in one of my future shows that you can do a training, and then we can maybe do an entry into the training that maybe we can call some people together, and then maybe see if we can go from there. But we still have one more clip. The Magnitsky Act, and it's about 5 minutes long, so I know maybe you can cut that kind of short to a little bit over 3 minutes long, and give the listeners an idea of what that act is all about.
Can I just read the name of it?
Yeah, go ahead.
The Russia and Moldova Jackson-Vanik Repeal and Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act of 2012, and that was Public Law 112-208, and now it is the 2016 Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act, and this is the basis for a government corporations saying, we are not going to cooperate with someone committing genocide.
Okay, and before you start that clip, I just pulled it up. United States promotes accountability for human rights violations, abuses, designation of corruptions, network linked to transitional organized crime, Treasury targets corruption, targeting repression and supporting democracy. Designation of targets linked to corruption by Dan Gettler in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and it's more than that. If you go in, if you just prompt what the Magnitsky Act really is all about, there's a lot of information on it.
And I mean, 5 minutes really isn't that long, so. It's really not. It's a pretty good clip. I enjoyed it. I listened to it twice.
Okay, you the skipper. So skip.
You're so funny. Okay,
now,
and this is entitled.
Go
ahead.
We need to realize that we cannot just sit there and let the genocide go on in the Congo and Burundi and just say, oh, it's going on. We have to get ourselves involved, because a lot of people are saying that the international financial system said, look, what we want to do is ruin individual families having agriculture in that region of Africa, because we don't want them growing food. We want them growing coffee because we want to break the price of coffee in Brazil and some other place. So it is not just who was getting out there with a machete and chopping somebody's head off? Somebody bought those machetes and had them shipped in. And what financial agencies are active that are paying for problem? And when you understand, see, you have people, students, young people can help you research. There's an organization called the City of London Financial District in London. And they are involved in international swapping of money. Billions of dollars go to here, and they go to the Maldives, and they go to these different offshore accounts, and they swap that money around and swap it so many times you can't tell. And then the next thing is the big criminal who got the money wrongly to start with, he suddenly gets a big investment of that same money, comes back, and somebody says, oh, it looks like it's legal to me. So true nonviolent direct action requires that we have people who are very smart about finance and very smart about money, and they understand how somebody gets rich from having a war.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to go against that.
And they give you the war to get rich.
Yeah, that's Executive Order number 13818, December 21st, 2017. That was by the Trump administration. That's blocking the property of persons involved in serious human rights abuse or corruption. So let's hear that clip, and then we'll talk a little bit on the other side.
All right.
Okay. And it's called "What Is the Magnitsky Act and How Can It Be Used Against Russian Human Rights Offenders?" And this is through the ABC News.
So the Magnitsky Act is a piece of legislation that's named after my lawyer Sergei Magnitsky, who uncovered a $230 million Russian government corruption scheme, exposed it, testified against the officials involved, and was subsequently arrested, tortured for 358 days, and murdered in Russian police custody in 2009. The Russians covered their tracks, circled the wagons, and refused to prosecute anybody involved. And so I went out to governments in the West, and I said, if they're not going to do justice in Russia, we need to create legislation to do justice in the West. And the thing we can do in the West is to freeze their assets and ban their visas. And that became known as the Magnitsky Act.
Is it effective?
It was first. Well, it's very effective. And the reason we know it's effective is that it was when it was passed in 2012, Vladimir Putin went out of his mind. He went completely apoplectic. He banned the adoption of Russian orphans by American families. He made it his single largest foreign policy priority to repeal the Magnitsky Act. He sent emissaries to Trump Tower before Trump was elected to try to get Trump to repeal the Magnitsky Act. And he's been chasing me around the world with death threats, kidnapping threats, Interpol red notices, extradition requests. I've become one of his most high-value targets because he's so angry that anyone could have the audacity to create consequences for his behavior.
That's fascinating, because what can be done now with the Magnitsky Act, and are we seeing this in the targeted sanctions? And from what you've said there, the idea of these sanctions and the impact it can have on Vladimir Putin, it can hurt.
There's no question. So the current sanctions that are being now imposed on Russian oligarchs is directly using the Magnitsky Act template. There's an absolute clean line between the Magnitsky Act passing in 2012 and the first sanctions list of oligarchs, which has come out over the last 48 hours. And this does hurt Putin personally and directly. I should point out that Vladimir Putin is a very rich man. He doesn't hold any money in his own name. The money is held by oligarch trustees. And so to get to Vladimir Putin personally and to create a real consequence for these illegal actions, the Magnitsky Act is, or these sanctions and the Magnitsky Act is the tool to use, and it is being used. And Vladimir Putin, for what it's worth, the moment that we announced that we were going to freeze the assets of the oligarchs, Putin was threatening nuclear war. So we know that we've found his exposed spot, his tender place, his Achilles heel, and we should now use it, ramp it up, ratchet it up as the atrocities continue.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you were at one point the single biggest foreign investor in Russia. Is that right? And so you understand the Russian economy intimately. At what point do we reach a tipping point? How long does this go on and the sanctions before it starts to hurt inside the country to the extent that people themselves start feeling the pinch of this and there may be some repercussions for Putin?
Well, in my opinion, people are already feeling the effects of this. You can see the lines at the ATMs. The prices of most consumer goods have probably jumped by 100%. There's going to be a massive
economic collapse in Russia because of all this. So I wouldn't bet, at least in the short term, that people are going to rise up and overthrow Putin. I think the purpose of all this economic strangulation is very simple, that we don't want to go to war with Russia with military, and so we need to basically cut off his ability to fund his war so he can't continue it. And to do that, we need to basically deplete him of all his resources, and we've done that with the Central Bank
That's
of Russia
right.
by freezing their assets. We've done that with the SWIFT ban of stopping trade between Russia and the West. And if we then freeze the offshore assets of Putin and the oligarchs, eventually they're going to run out of money. And they will be able to go to China hat in hand as a lender of last resort. But I still think that the financial capabilities of Russia in the medium term, and I'm not talking about the next few weeks, I'm talking about the next few years, will be severely
yeah.
limited. And so that is going to kind of has to be unless and until we want to engage with Russia in a real military conflict, that
mm-hmm.
this is our best shot at stopping him from doing what he's doing.
There you have it. Stop the man. All we got to do is just stop the man. Back in your hands.
Okay.
We have to have a longer view.
Do we have any callers on yet?
No, we do not.
Okay, so David, we're gonna wind this down. But what are your last comments on the topics that you talked about? And I'm definitely going to invite you back on the show so that we can show people what the nonviolent training looked like.
Let's go back to Mohandas Gandhi. A single perfected satyagrahi could stop an atom bomb. And Henry David Thoreau said he lived up there in Vermont or somewhere, and he said, if I was going to go to Canada and I had to first get organized and call a bunch of people so we could all get a car and go up there together, he says, if I just started walking to Canada, I would get there before those people ever got themselves organized. So, and this is what Gandhi has told us. This is what Thoreau told us. And this is what the people who are fighting slavery in the United States, you go out and you do it. But yes, let's ask our friends to come along. If they don't understand it yet, let's try everyone that you meet. See if you can get them if they would just call Brother Parks and say, we want to have a nonviolent training session, we can come
mm-hmm.
to their church or organization and provide that training.
Interesting. Very interesting. I think Joe from Montana has just joined us. Hold on a second. Hello, Joe. Is that you? 6606?
No, this is not Joe. This is somebody else. Were you expecting somebody named Joe?
Yes, Joe from Montana. How you doing, sir? We have tonight Save the World Part 1, and our guest is Mr. David Wyaneth out of Yakima, Washington, and he's been delivering some very important information to us. Have you been listening at all in the background?
No, I just got here, so I thought I'd join.
Okay.
This is a political show tonight, right?
We're about ready to wind down, but I wouldn't say it's political, but it is, but it isn't. What would you say, Sergeant Parks?
Well, no, it's just information, Joe, on how can we save the world one person, one idea at a time. You know, it's basically about how to save the world in a nonviolent way. We don't want to take up arms and go out in the street. Of course, we might get all... you know, get killed. But, yeah, this is all about how can we save the world one person at a time. And now we have my friend David Wayne at this talk. Give us three different things that we can do to learn how to accomplish our goals with nonviolent acts. So,
okay, yeah. I like to hear that. So, one person at a time.
We're just about winding down, but I could get David. Why don't you sort of like summarize?
Well, let me I'll use one person example. He got on a plane in Russia, and he found out that Putin had hired some of his KGB friends to put the most deadly poison in the world in his underwear. So there he was on the airplane, and from his underwear comes Putin's poison. And he finally got himself to Germany, and several months in Germany, he was recuperating from Putin trying to poison him to death. And he's against the grabbing up people and putting them in prison. He's against canceling all the political parties. He's against starting a war that the people don't want.
Okay, and you're breaking up. Is it me or is it your transmission?
Yeah, I think it's you, dude. I think you're breaking up, so.
Well, I'll try
to
silence myself.
Go ahead.
Anyway, the man said, I'm in Germany. Theoretically, I'm safe, but I'm not a coward. And he went back to Germany. He went back to Russia. Now, as soon as he got off the plane, the Russians put him in prison. But they don't hardly think that they can just kill him in prison. So this is what I'm saying. All over Russia, people are saying that he's courageous. He's standing up. I don't care if he got arrested. He's still saying Putin is wrong. And this is one person, just like Gandhi said, one perfected satyagrahi can stop an atom bomb. It doesn't make logical sense, but it's true.
Well, when it comes to Gandhi, the reason why Gandhi won was because he had leverage. The British were fighting on another front, and they offered Gandhi a deal for that he and his followers wouldn't interfere with that particular war, and then they'd give India independence. So it wasn't because the people got a beating when they were trying to, escape the caste system. Just like in civil rights, it wasn't really Martin Luther King who got blacks civil rights. It was riots. So one person at a time sounds good if it's going to be one person per second. So at the end of the day, you'll have 1 million people per day. But I don't see how in this particular day and age, with the medical tyranny, all pervasive as it is around the world, how the rebellion against it is going to end up being peaceful as opposed to being violent.
The point of a nonviolent training session is to bring people like you into the room and to have the smart planning and courage to implement it.
And to what avail?
Yeah, but you know, the movement of Dr. King, you know, that's been debated ever since before he died. The movement of Dr. King and stuff, sure, there was people getting out in the streets, and then, you know, there was bloodshed on that. But the movement spurred that, you know. The movement got to change. Without the movement and stuff, then I think we're set back 25 years. You know, so actually, let's take the predicament that we're in right now, Joe, in Ukraine. Okay, they want a no-fly zone. Okay, Ukrainians want a no-fly zone, but the powers that be don't want to start no war. What is your opinion on that?
Well, I hear both sides about Putin and the Ukraine, so I don't really know who's right and who's wrong. I've heard that the war between the Ukrainians and the Russians have been going on for 8 years with Soros and the Pentagon funding the war for Ukraine against Russia for the last 8 years to the tune of billions of dollars. And I also hear that Russia went into the Ukraine because of American-funded biolabs there. So I don't really know what to believe because the mainstream media is full of lies. And when you read material which is alt-right or alt-left, they have a nice confirmation bias. So I don't know.
If you look in your history book about what they call the Holodomor, it was intentional famine put on Ukraine by Joseph Stalin. So Ukrainians did not get out of World War II.
Yeah, right. I'm hearing about like every 10th word.
The Ukrainians didn't get out of World War II in 1945. It was until 1953.
David, hold on a second. Can you hold your phone closer to your mouth because you like every other yes what work.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Is
that working better?
That's a little better. Thank you.
So the Ukrainians have been fighting against the Russians at least since 1940, and what are they going to do? We have a chance to produce nonviolent pressure all over the world to support the Ukrainians.
And they're a sovereign nation. You know, they're a sovereign nation. Even though they're they're right on the border and stuff with Russia, they're a sovereign nation. So, you know, and then to put 150,000, 200,000 troops on that border, I kind of think that, and then the United States has been giving the Ukrainians billions of dollars a year for support. And I guess that really pissed Putin them off, you know. But for them to just attack those people, okay, killing innocent people, 3 million people ran out of the country and stuff, you know. And I would say that, you know, if they did a no-fly zone over there, it would only escalate things. Then he's already said he's going to do nuclear weapons. How do you know that? So I think that diplomacy is in the works. It should be in the works. That way nobody else has to lose their lives. But I think Putin has another thing where he wants to take over that port and block the Ukrainians and stuff in from the east or whatever that is, wherever that port that he has destroyed this whole town around that port. Like to me, he's trying to landlock the Ukrainians, you know, in.
Well, the British and the French and the Turks have been fighting against Russia coming up and taking the Mediterranean since the first Crimean War. So these are wars that didn't just start this year or just 8 years ago. And these Ukrainians have been fighting it for a century.
Okay, David, you want to repeat the Magnitsky Act and get Joe up on that?
The Magnitsky Act was known as the Russia Moldova Jackson Vanek Repeal and Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act of 2012, Public Law 112-208. But now it's the 2016 Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act of the United States government. But it has to be renewed in 2022. So these are the basic legal principles that empower the United States government to conduct its economic boycott of Russia.
I hardly heard anything. Okay, here's my viewpoint about America and other people's wars. We have to stop being the police chief of the world. I found out recently that America's funded 73% of all dictatorships in the world. So here we are protesting against dictatorships and their abuse of their people and their lack of civil rights and human rights and yada, yada, yada. Yet the Pentagon and Congress is funding those particular dictators. America needs to mind its own business. We have enough problems here at home where we have to concentrate on American citizens. We don't even shore up borders down there by Mexico, yet we're worried about the Ukraine. They've had their conflicts with Russia and their neighbors for years. I'm tired of seeing our boys go overseas in the name of democracy, coming back paraplegics. Let's mind our own business. Let the world take care of each other. We'll take care of ourselves. And maybe we'll all be better off that way.
Amen. But we do not want to pay our money to support Putin's war. We don't want to buy his oil.
Well, then we're going to have to suffer huge inflation shortages and everybody getting up in arms about, well, did Putin cause it? Did Biden cause it? Or hear liberals say Trump caused it. So, again, if we knew how to mind our own business, became energy independent, manufacturing independent, and stopped going overseas in the name of democracy, where really we're over there to get either the dope or the oil, again, we'd be better off. We wouldn't have to rely on China to supply us with 95% of the computer chips. All they have to do is deny exporting us the computer chips, and we're a done deal. The nitrogen that's necessary for fertilizer, I hear, is getting sanctioned. So food prices are going to go up over here as a result of meddling over there, because Putin is going to impose sanctions on hostile states, meaning America, Germany, England, everybody else, and NATO. Again, we should mind our own business. But with this too much money and not minding our own business. The lobbyists get rich. Defense contractors get rich. International bankers get rich. So what people have to do is wake up to those facts, and maybe we might elect some people in Congress who know how to actually look out for us.
You know, that might work, Joe, if we could get a handle on the black money that's moving everything. You know, those people only get richer when we have wars and stuff, you know. And I agree with you somewhat. I'm not going to go 100% on that agreement because, see, I've been stationed in Europe, and I've seen from the very beginning in the 60s and stuff what has taken place after World War II. You know, the whole idea was that we could try and keep I kind of see that a whole bunch of politics was pulled during that time, too, so that we could keep everything away from America. We could keep all the hatred, and we didn't do a good job of that, you know. And we should have been focusing on America, but it's hard to do when America don't have what we used to have, steel plants, manufacturing deal and stuff, you know. No, they did. They sent all of that stuff overseas to China and everywhere else they could think of to cause what is happening now, you know, and the rich on getting rich. Rich people just kept getting rich, you know.
That's my
now,
point. If you want to find
those countries that we said that we made an alliance with to help support them, okay? I say feed them until they get well, and then let's try and concentrate on something else. And another thing is stuff about the Ukrainian deal. If you would look at it, then Ukrainian people will look white. So you got everybody in America right now saying, and this don't give Russia no deal to come in and then invade them. But they're white, so we're saying, okay, everybody is saying it's wrong. But what about those other countries and stuff, like Trump called those other third world shithole countries and stuff, you know, that's been trying to get into the United States? Oh, no, we don't want these people in. So it's a bit of that being played as well. So I see the point. I see both arguments. I really do. But I still think that fighting is not going to be the answer to being able to solve that. It's going to be able to let's talk about what's going on. I don't believe that we have to actually fight about nothing, but people get hungry and they don't have access to different things. They're going to tend to want to get out in the street and bust some heads. So I see that.
Bust some heads.
Well, of course they are. People are, you know, people are going to pray until they don't see God appearing on his white horse or his golden chariot. And then they'll either take up arms or they get killed out of starvation or maybe killed in battle. The world revolves around conflict. It'd be nice to have a nonviolent solution, but that usually doesn't happen. Every country has been forged on battlefields of blood. Again, it'd be nice if it was just about people coming to terms about how to share resources, and that works when capitalism works well. But when capitalism gets in bed with crony capitalism, then it doesn't work that well, and you get people, as you were talking about, moving the headquarters over to China. And if you really want to know about what the root core of war is, all you got to do is read the book called War is a Racket by a two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, General Smedley Butler. Served in World War I, World War II, and he says it's all about money.
Well, talk about the money. Who followed the money, you know? Follow the money. World War One was DuPont them, and all those people that owned. It escapes me now. You know, then after World War II,
they had work. They had contracts with the Pentagon Defense. So they were making money selling nylon and all that.
Yeah, they got paid after the war because they lost something during the war. The United States government had to pay them. World War One and World War Two, okay. Big corporations and stuff. They lost companies and they lost, you know, equipment. And the United States government had to pay them. You know.
So war is a racket. So all people know that you follow the money, then you're following the motivations behind war. But they don't understand the significance of all of that, that it's been the core of about all wars. A nation invades another nation because they want those resources.
Okay, Joe, so getting back to David's spiel on nonviolence, okay, that's just another way. I mean, the way you're talking about it, let's go storm the Capitol or let's go with whatever – you know, that's a film.
Well, eventually going to come down to that. It's going to solve the best deal.
There's different things that we could be doing, okay,
I'm open for it. I'm willing to listen to find out any method that works that in a nonviolent way will be able to wipe out corruption so that America in particular can get back to, you know, to minding its own business and doing what it should for our people. So I'm open to it. So, you know, okay. So
I agree.
I'm willing.
But you got different things that need to take place and stuff there, because basically now we're just divided in half, you know, and then we're not really taking care of us. But there has to be a way for people, everyday people and stuff that feel that they're being oppressed, to look and seek guidance as to how they can get their voices heard. It seems to me that the people in the position, and then I like your approach and stuff about sending them through the ringer, because I think anybody that want to be in the public domain should go through the ringer. Should be no rite of passage to do that. You get elected by your peers, but before you go, it should be a member level.
Oh, yeah, they should be vetted. Absolutely.
Yeah,
there's a way that I do it better than that can vet a politician, so that we can find out if the politician is a phony or not. But you've got a guest that's talking about the nonviolent solution. So I'm open to listen how effective and how long it's going to take for this nonviolent solution
to
take place.
Well, let's think for a minute about the cash solution. People take their retirement funds and invest them with a business in China. That the purpose of the business is to make missiles to kill American aircraft carriers. And they are going to make a lot of money because the company in China is going to give them a lot of dividends. And that's great, because then they're going to be able to kill the American aircraft carriers. I think we need to be very careful about what we invest in. And right now, there's a huge American investment in China, and the businesses are owned by the military in China, and the purpose of the military is to kill the American sailors. So stop doing the bad things. That's the first part of nonviolence. Don't do the bad things.
They won't make no money if they stop doing that. Okay?
There you go.
The love of money is the root of evil.
We all know what we have to do. Even the politicians say it every day. We have to divest from countries that have bad civil rights records. We have to divest from countries who are warlike. We have to divest from China, who is oppressing the Uyghurs. We have to divest from Russia, who's oppressing the Ukrainians. We have to divest from Hungary or Turkey, who has a history of oppressing the Armenians. We all know what we should do, have to do, that will follow the money. The question really boils down to, how does it become accomplished? Now, what we have to do, how do we do it?
Investment funds.
The first step is that we got to talk about it. You know, we know what the problems are. You know, talk about what the solutions could be, and then how we can help in our own way.
That's my question.
I don't see. That's what this whole discussion is all about. What can we do? It might not be the form of nonviolent training. You know. It could be having this discussion and stuff so that we realize between amongst ourselves and stuff, okay, that I'm listening to you, you're listening to me, so we can think about, wow, what I'm doing right here and what you're doing in Montana and stuff could mean, okay, delivering us, at least giving us some kind of sanity about what's going on. And then we talking to other people to see what they're doing, you know. And then
so has anybody come up with a solution yet?
Yeah. All of us have to come up and put in with what we think the solution is. I think it can't be no one of us, you know, to try and one of us come up with an idea of some things that we can do, you know. That's why it hurts
okay,
me when I have these discussions.
All right, so again, tonight the topic is about the nonviolent solution. I'd like to know how that's going to be accomplished.
We
okay,
stop.
Well, David,
you
want to tell him your idea?
Now,
go ahead, David.
We need to get together in face-to-face groups, in the church, in the city hall, in the university lecture hall, and hear each other's opinions, but steer the conference to what nonviolent solutions can we do. Right now we're going to have a worldwide food shortage because of the food that is not going to get out of Ukraine. What can
okay,
we do?
Okay, so you come up right with the first step. Okay, the churches, universities can get together and start talking about solutions. All right, so who's in charge of that?
Each individual group forms itself. Now, I used to belong to the Fellowship of Reconciliation. They can help. You can also join the American Friends Service Committee, or the Unitarians have the Unitarian Service Committee. You can make up a group of your own in addition to those. But Martin Luther King had the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and James and I are involved with the NAACP. So inside, we have monthly meetings of the NAACP, and we talk about somebody came out with a hangman's noose and said to the black person that lived out in Terrace Heights, you shouldn't even be here. So we organized for a month, and we had every law enforcement from FBI to the state of Washington to the county of Washington to the police department in our community center, and we're talking about what can we do to stop the hate groups that are obviously here in Yakima. So these are things.
What came out of that discussion?
I think there was an awareness.
But basically, what came out of
problem.
That discussion and stuff is that we got information and stuff on, like, there's 2 to 3 different white supremacist groups and stuff operating 5 or 6 miles outside of Yakima. So the FBI and stuff gave us information to say who these groups were and what were their motives and stuff. So, you know, that's information and stuff that we could use, okay, to better ourselves and then understand where that inference of hate was coming from, okay? And then how to report it if we've seen it and different things like that. So information is only good if you know what to do with it.
And it doesn't have to be – we had health conferences at our community center. Now, if you die from getting shot, that's one thing, but you could die from diabetes or something. And if we have a health conference in our community center, that could save somebody's life right there in our neighborhood. So there's not just one thing you do. There's many things you do that are nonviolent.
But the major problem which is facing America today, and always has been corruption. So has that particular issue been addressed?
Oh, yeah. We talk about corruption all the time, but it's really, really hard to have something done about it when the people and stuff that are supposed to be helping us, like the government and people in different places, overlook what's going on. You know, like we have a problem here where the city actually is taking all of the resources and sending it west and neglecting 2 whole districts and stuff here. They don't do no roads. They don't do no streets. The only thing they do is come through and dump garbage once a week. Sidewalks look like shit. Schools look like shit. So we understand and we know who the enemy is. We know who the opposition is. You know, now that don't mean that we stop You know, you go to the city council and you make whatever it is that you feel is taking place, but you got to have the facts. You know, you don't go up there talking smack that's something that you don't know about. You get the facts and then you take it to them. And it's working. It's slow. But it's working.
We had a deal when my kids were very little. The house right next door, they were dealing drugs. And then across the street, the house behind that house, they were dealing drugs. And then if you just walk over to the main drag, there was a drugstore there. And in the front of that drugstore, they were dealing drugs. So we started a neighborhood organization. There was no violence. There was no guns. But we put up a sign that said, "We take numbers." And as the drug customers came by, we wrote down their numbers and we turned them in. Now, at that time, I was the president of the largest carpenter union in the state. And the mayor who was in charge of the police, he was speaking at that convention I was at. And I gave him my business card and I said the address. And I said, "These people are just openly selling drugs right there in a neighborhood." And that night, there was police raid, and that whole drug operation was canceled out. So, and this came because I had organized in my block, and I told them, look, everybody that you've been calling, switch your calls to the mayor, because he is in charge of the police department. So it's neighborhood organizations. Nonviolence is going to work.
Well, that's
and
an example
have,
of
we
a
have
work.
Situation with gangs and stuff, you know, so we got a gang prevention intervention program. Normally what happens with gangs is young people and stuff don't have places to go, especially after school. So we formed the Gang Prevention Intervention Coalition and stuff to just cut the legs and stop it. Did it stop the gangs? Nope. The police ran them down and stuff for a year, but after that year, okay, everything just stopped. And they ran the gangs from one district to the other district and stuff, you know. Then come to find out that, oh, now the city's got $500,000 grant to the police department for gangs, okay?
Hmm.
I'm saying, wow. So
funny how that works.
Yeah, it's really ludicrous, but you don't stop. You don't stop. Right now they got rid of the gang intervention program. They got rid of it, and now they have something else that's going on that they only go to kids like 9 years old. They don't even do high school kids. I'm saying, what the heck with that? You go to the city council. We need some for older kids because they're getting in the problem. And then in this district,
right,
we have 4 or 5 killings, not 1-2 blocks from where I live, every year, like clockwork. And they be telling me, well, you should just move. Hell, I already bought this house, man. Where the hell am I going to move to? You know?
Right.
A lot of people shouldn't be forced out of their particular neighborhoods, right. But the two examples that you two just stated were very real, hardcore examples. So I presume since Mr. Parks and David, I guess you go to the same meetings. Do you have a central website that people can go to and find out how to get more information on this?
Go ahead,
well,
David.
Some of that work is right through the NAACP.
I didn't hear anything you said.
I was going to say that again, please, David.
The
faded out.
NAACP coordinated a lot of our meetings. And then we have a neighborhood center, the Henry Beauchamp Center. You know, 5 years ago, the city of Yakima said, well, let's get a bulldozer and knock that thing down. We'll make it into a parking lot. And we got thousands of notices printed up. We packed. There's a big Catholic church up here that we packed that with, and we tried to get a lot of people, Spanish speaking, English speaking. Pardon?
What state are you in?
I'm in Yakima, Washington.
In Washington, okay.
Yeah.
And so we made them call a meeting of the biggest civic center. And what do you think? Should we bulldoze that community center? And everybody said, no way. So we kept the community center. So inside of that community center, I just brought my own computer and started a community access computing center. And then somebody must have thought, well, that's a good idea. So they put a branch of the library in there, and they put three computers in there for the kids to have access to the computers. And yes, I regret that I haven't done more, but we have been doing stuff right along.
Oh, yeah.
Well, good. This is the kind of stuff that people need to know about. So, yeah. I mean, if you've got individual successes, they could be replicated throughout the United States. So if you have, and since you already have the successes, then you should have a website that would allow people to know what's going on. I mean, it doesn't make – it's like having a good product. If you have a good product which can help people, but people don't know about it, you're not going to make a sale. So the same thing with what you two guys have done. What you two guys have done is very impressive. It makes a dent. But I had to go through, what, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 questions in order to get down to this. Let me tell you something. People would be very glad to know what you two are doing. But if they don't know about it, they don't know how to do it themselves. And if you don't have a website up, you can't expect people to join a movement they don't know about.
Well, I am so glad that we got this online activity tonight. Inez, you are the hero of the day.
No, Sergeant Parks is. This is his segment. So keeping it real with Sergeant Parks, this is his segment. So he's the one who brings
the
topics and the people.
This is my way of trying to reach people to do, because I kind of know what it takes and stuff to try and do things. You know, there are so many things that I'm doing right now, neighborhood cleanup, also working with the police to try and get kids and stuff to understand that kids got to see what police, who police are and what they're doing, okay, so that they don't get caught up in a whole lot of different things, okay? If you talk to a lot of kids and stuff, they think that, well, what are you going to do when the police stop you? You know, they don't have no idea, you know.
Right.
So I got this thing going with the police that they come out from time to time and they talk to kids and stuff that's in, you know, around where I live and in different places and stuff, and they talk to them, you know, they talk to them civilly and they, you know, try and interact with them. Sometimes they come to the gyms and they play. I let the kids play against the police officers because I want them to know. You don't have to be afraid of the police, okay? And if they run into a police officer, something didn't happen, they tell me, and I go talk to the chief. You know, I try and talk to that officer, so what's taking place? You know, because the district that I live in is really it's kind of dangerous, you know. It's kind of dangerous, and the last year has been really dangerous, you know. And the different types of cleanups and stuff we do is it's just like a ghetto on some of the streets and stuff here that you can tell. People walking through the community and they see, you know, this junk everywhere, then they're going to be saying, oh, this is where I can go do a robbery or break in or whatever they want to do. You know, so my stickler is that the city, I call the city. If you got your car broke down and parked on the street, I'm calling the city. You know, and I want everybody to know that I call the city. And if your property is dilapidated and falling down and you got trash and stuff, I'm calling them. You know, first I'm going to try and get with you. I got friends that's going to be able to help, you know. If you need something, if you do the dump fees, we'll help you clean that up. You know,
Right.
The problem with this community is that we are absentee landlords. Most people here don't own their property. Hell, I own my property and stuff, you know. So that's internal situations that you see taking place, you know, that you try and do as much as you can to do it. My wife keep telling me, oh, somebody, they're going to come and bust a cap in your ass. So, well, they just bust a cap in my ass. What? Because I'm going to be cap.
That's very possible. Again, I'm gonna stress the website, because if you're doing everything all by yourself, or if only a few people are doing things all by themselves, you can't be surprised when nobody else knows about it. When you have, is anybody here familiar with the power of social media?
Nobody knows about it outside. Nobody knows about it outside of this conversation here, but inside this community, you don't talk to too many people that don't know me. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but I don't
have to have a website to be able
you
to.
Do. You, Mr. Well, Parks, you do. You and David do. Okay. Websites are what, because when people want to look up information, the very first thing they do, and they have been doing it for over a decade since Google refined its search engine, was to go online. Okay? So you do need a website. If you want people to emulate what you're doing, what David's doing, you need to have a website, and you need to have that website tied into YouTube, Twitter, and the rest of the social media. It's going to take work.
Joe.
But if that's
Joe,
what you want,
say,
that's what you're going to have to
Joe,
do.
Joe, you got a good idea. But if James and David can get Joe to work with us, maybe you can help us figure out how to do that website. And Inez already has something going, and Sergeant Parks has something going. We can put it together. But back when you heard people say, oh, let's take the money away from the police, I got one of those American flags that has a blue stripe up the middle, that blue lives matter just as much as every other color of lives matter. And I stood on a street corner for a month with that blue lives matter because I want to support the police. My daughter gets up and I take her to the meetings. We have an explorer post so she can get acquainted with the police. She wears a police uniform for the explorer post and she's supporting the right behavior in our community. She doesn't do everything I tell her to do, but she's doing something to support good behavior in the community. And Joe, I think you can help us get that website.
Well, you can go to, what is it? Oh, God. And you can get a free website. Ah, jeez. Well, look in Google. And look. Webly, and there's another one, but that's not the one I'm talking about. There's another one which is well known for where you're putting up free websites with plugins, and you can put up forums in there, and you can spread the word. Now, if you just want to talk about what you're doing in your own communities, then you're being successful. But if you want to start a movement, you're going to have a website, again, tie it into Twitter, tie it into YouTube, tie it into Reddit, tie it into Facebook. Facebook I don't even like because they get your information, they put it into a database, and they have profiles of everybody that's on Facebook. So that's why you need your own independent website.
Joe? Mr. Parks, hold on. Is that the one you're talking about, freewebs.com?
No, it's a different one. I'll tell you what. Oh, I forgot.
Well,
I have my cell phone here.
I can look
it up again.
There's one called WordPress.
No, there's a few of them, but the one that's really good and really free. Webly or Wibbly, that's not bad. Twix is another one, I think. Let me check it out. I forgot, but I'll find out in a few minutes, and I'll be right back with it.
Okay. After the...
Okay, so in the meantime, we're going to wrap this discussion up.
Okay.
David, you got anything you want to say?
The idea that we're going to work on it in the future is very heartening.
Okay.
Right.
But that don't stop you from compiling information and bringing it, you know, and then we can get it out. But yeah, he has a good idea and stuff to put up a website, so that might be in the works for you. But I'm still thinking about it. I like this little bit, this piece right here, to be able to do. People have ways and stuff of getting a hold of me. So
now,
you know, what I'm gonna
James,
do,
you know Charles, our auditor?
Yeah.
He does the elections?
Yeah, I know Charles.
It's WordPress.
Hold on, Joe, just a second. Go ahead.
Go ahead. And Charles Ross, brother, used to work for me at the center.
I go in there and I sit and talk to him, and he says it takes courage to do anything because he has had the gang members come into his office and say to him, listen, Charles, we know what school your children go to. So it is not without risk to do anything good in Yakima. And I think about the safety of my daughter, and I just don't blunder out in the world and try to stir up a hornet's nest.
Well,
that's a wise decision.
Got to do what you got to do. You know, that's what I look at. And that's better than doing nothing. A lot of people just not doing nothing. People talk a good game, but you never, ever see them. You know, I'll side with you if I know what your track record is. You know, it's just like
but that goes back to, see, a lot of people think there's a huge difference between doing something and getting something done. Now, you went to the mayor, and the mayor got rid of the gangs. See, that was very efficient. David has a very good point. The gangs come into somebody's office, right, especially now with the environment in which the felony bar has been raised and people don't get prosecuted for assault and battery, and there's no cash bail. The gangs are emboldened. So you do have to tread very carefully. The name of the website is WordPress. That's the best one, okay? But when you two get together again at your community meetings, ask if you have a web designer that's part of the community, and ask them for their advice about designing a website. And again, you're going to have to learn how to have it connected to other parts of social media.
I think that's a real good idea.
Yeah, that's good information, Joe. Thank you.
Yeah, and don't rely on Blog Talk Radio, okay? People come to Blog Talk Radio by accident. Blog Talk Radio is not Facebook. Facebook advertises everywhere, every time, all the time. You can't go to a website without seeing a share button for Facebook, Reddit, or Twitter. They're all paying for it. Black Door Radio doesn't have that kind of money. So you need a website that's free. It'll take some elbow grease, but if you're serious about spreading the word about, you know, nonviolent solutions, then that's what you got to do. This is the 21st century.
That's true.
Well, Inez, do you
want to
close with a prayer? Thank
you, Joe. We really appreciate that. I learn something from you every time I hear you, guy.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, we
I can contribute there, Mr. Parks.
Yes. We always enjoy Joe coming on. The last hour.
Yeah.
Usually it's always like the last hour when we get ready to close out. But that's okay. I still love me some Joe.
But we want to thank all right.
Yes. Yeah, so we want to thank you all for joining us this evening with Save the World, Part 1. So join us in a couple of weeks. I think it's April the 2nd for Part 2. And if you want to listen to this episode or any other episodes on demand, please go to the homepage of doitallinthemall.com. And on the right-hand side, click on the radio icon and peruse all of our shows that have gone on in the past. and somebody was getting ready to say something.
I just wonder if we want to close with a prayer.
Oh, we will. We will. And so we want to join us on the fourth Sunday service with Reverend Ronnie Marshall this Sunday from Little Rock, Arkansas, Tuesday, March the 29th. We have Miss Inez says, let's talk about it with Laquita Parks, Mr. Parks' daughter, Pay Pro V Publishing, on the topic of what's your story? And the show, both shows are at 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern. But I do want you all to keep your ear to the ground, because I'm going to have a show talking about what if suicide doesn't work. So that's coming up as well. So this has been your hostess, Miss Inez, CEO, fashion designer of Anais Alcu Designs. And again, we thank each and every one of our listeners for joining us in. Keep your ear to Let's Be a Radio and listen to what's happening. And we want to just say peace out on grazing in the grass. And then we're going to have a prayer, a do-it-all-in-the-mall prayer. And join us again, like I said, on Sunday. Yes, grazing in the grass. Yeah.
I haven't heard that song in a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Raising in the grass. Yes, I love that song. We always used to play that song all the time. But like I said, thank you to David. Thank you to Joe, as always. He called himself in. And, of course, thank you to Sergeant Parks, as he is here as well. And our prayer for the day is, as in.
Lord Jesus, we ask you to help us to understand and strengthen us to provide for ourselves and our communities by working together. It takes each and every one of us to come together as the kings and queens that we are and have always been. Thank you.
Amen.
Amen.